Welcome to episode 8 of Cricket Only Better. I'm Ed Hawkins, betting.betfair's cricket correspondent. Not too proud to say, hey, yes, maybe we did take our eye off the ball, a red ball. Maybe we got caught up in the crazy loving that is this pod, and we didn't ask the hard questions, pin people down and say, why? Tell me why.
I'm Sam Collins, and I have absolutely no idea what you are going on about.
You're jointly responsible.
I mean, it was completely unintelligible.
The point of Cricket Only Better is to banish lazy cliches. Never assume. It makes an ass out of you and me.
Are you calling me a lazy cliche?
I'm talking about our chief bugbear on this show. Technique and temperament in Test cricket being eroded by the white ball. Where's the data on it? We've been going on about it for weeks, but where is the evidence?
Okay, I like where you're going with this, Ed. What have you got lined up? How are you going to tackle this?
I've got the answer. Analyst Ed Bayliss from redballdata.com is here to answer that question, and one question only.
So, short interview then.
Well, I've got some others as well, just lined up, just in case.
So, Ed, would you say that two Eds are better than one?
Why don't you just tell them what else we've got before you start getting carried away with your funny little jibes?
So, what else have we got on the show? We have got a bumper preview for India versus West Indies, the T20, from Hyderabad on Friday. You've been beavering away on that one. And our big interview this week is the charming Andrew Miller from Crick Info. Knows absolutely nothing about cricket, but he's a lovely bloke. So we're throwing him a bone. We're going to ask him this. Where is this England Test team heading? Greatness or mediocrity?
Got some good stats as well to share with him on that one. Wonderful. And there is Mythbuster. Your Mythbuster. Your choice.
Quite excited about this one because to me this, you know, what have I learned over the last 8 weeks?
Finally, you contribute something to this show. It's Andy Flower. Red ball or white ball? Red ball or white ball? Remember, all we're offering is the truth. Nothing more. It's cricket. Only better.
What an innings. What a player. Take a bow, Ben Stokes.
Brian Charles Lara becomes the first man in the history of the game to register a score of 400.
Six sixes in an over. Yuvraj Singh finishes things off in style.
England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins.
Betfair Betting Podcast presents Cricket Only Better.
Ed Hawkins, first item on the agenda. India versus West Indies, first 2020 at Hyderabad on Friday. Betfair Sportsbook have India 4-9, West Indies 7-4. How are these two lining up? What have we got? What can we glean ahead of this one?
India have got some of their big guns back. Jasprit Bumrah is not one of them. Hardik Pandya is not one of them. But the holy trinity of Rohit, Shikhar Dhawan and Virat Kohli are in your top three. And then you've got the spin twins Kuldeep and Yuz Chahal. And pace aces Bhuv Kumar and Mohammad Shami. So it's a pretty strong India team. And we've got some emerging talent that are trying to nail down a place in this team ahead of the World 2020, next year. KL Rahul, Shreyas Iyer, and one of those two is probably going to miss out in that batting order for this first game. Probably Rahul, because Iyer was the top run scorer in the recent three-game series versus Bangladesh.
So what you're saying, I like it. So what you're saying here is there's the jeopardy here is essentially in the competition for places in the Indian top order.
That's absolutely it. That's what it is. And we've also got a bit of jeopardy with Deepak Chahar looking to upset the apple cart, forcing his way into that pacer lineup, and Washington Sanhar, a sort of spinning all-rounder who's trying to split up Yuz Chahal and Kuldeep. So that is the competitive juice for India in this series. They've won 7 of them and lost 6 in 2009, which isn't a great record for a 4-9 shot, I'd have thought. They're conceding an average of 7.9 runs per over in that period and only scoring 8.03 runs per over. So they're not this great T20 side by any stretch of the imagination. Okay. And they lost to Bangladesh only a few weeks ago, and we talked about that on this show.
Okay, so basically I did not mean to be disrespectful when I said the only jeopardy was in the Indian top order. Tell us about the West Indies. What have they got?
No Andre Russell, bad. No Chris Gayle, good. Warmed up okay with a 2-1 win v Afghanistan in the T20 series, and a lot of punters would have thought they'd have found that going a little bit tougher than they did, actually. But they did badly lose their way in the defeat they did suffer. managing to post only 106 in a chase of 148. So that is a bit of a worry on tacky, slow India surfaces. And those games were in Lucknow in India. That's where they were staged. Kieran Pollard is the captain, which we like. Often they've got a very one-dimensional pacing attack. And we saw that in the World Cup. So where is the spinner to turn things on his head? Where's the bit of magic? They might have found one with Hayden Walsh, who basically won the Caribbean Premier League on his own for Barbados Tridents. Just bamboozled teams, just started running through them. So they've got a bit of an X factor there. He's bowling leg break googly. So it's going to be really interesting to see how he goes. But they really need Nick Pooran or Shimron Hetmeyer in that middle order to step up. Lots of potential. No more batter in the world has more individual talent, natural talent, than those two. But can they actually put their hand up under pressure in tricky conditions, which they're going to come up against?
Ed Hawkins. This man knows his stuff.
And also we like Keswick Williams as a pace bowler and Sheldon Cottrell as a pace bowler. Good wickets up front, wicket takers. People to think about there for your top bowlers, but we're going to come back to top bowlers and we'll talk about them a bit later.
Okay, interesting. And you know, while we're talking about quick bowlers taking wickets up front, what's the pitch going to be like at the Rajiv Gandhi International Stadium?
I think it might help the spinners because obviously Sunrisers Hyderabad of the IPL rely on spin. Rashid Khan does his business there, and it's a slow wicket. It's not hard, fast, swings through the line of the ball without a care in the world kind of surface. The mean score is 159 from 87 games. More than 160 busted only once in the last six. If you bust 160, you win 62% of the time. If you bust 170, you win 70% of the time. And the chaser is winning 54% of the time. So there's a toss bias there. There's some good nuggets to get your teeth into for in-play bettors. If we're trying to find a way to get against India in this at short odds, West Indies 7-4 probably be bigger on the exchange. We want them to be chasing. We're not going to consider backing West Indies unless they're chasing because of that toss bias.
Okay, interesting. Still talking India versus West Indies at Hyderabad. What is the score with the top bats and bowlers?
Well, value. We found some value, which is always good news, isn't it? We found a couple of bets for people.
Okay.
I've done some good work for them.
Great.
Don't thank me all at once.
Great.
And look, if you want to bet anybody to score runs in this world of ours, who would it be, Sam?
Andy Flower.
We haven't done Mythbuster yet, Sam. We don't know. Come on.
I'm just calling forward to it. I've just got a hunch. No, come on. It's our friend Virat, isn't it?
Yeah, so Virat is obviously favourite to win this market. He's won 7 out of the last 21. He averages 41 at the Rajiv Gandhi Stadium. So he's got ground form, which is really important. But what is his price? He's got to be a wrong price. We'd take anything bigger than 2-1 because of that hit rate over the last 2 years. 7 wins in 21. 5-2 Betfair Sportsbook. Value. It's a wrong price. You can bet that without a care. Don't worry.
That's the headline news.
You won't. There's nothing wrong with that bet. You won't feel a mug if it loses. You know you've had a good, solid wager.
I'm just going to say addendum here. There's like a star for the Betfair social media guys. This is the pullout quote. Value. Virat is value at 5-2.
Bang on. And it's also good because Rohit Sharma is not a wrong price. Expected to go very hard at the ball up front. Look, he's a fantastic player. I'm not saying he's a bad player.
I'm
not saying he's
that,
a bad person. I'm sure he's lovely. I like the guy. His price is 13-5. That is the price he should be. So we can't really bet him because we only ever bet wrong prices in this game, Sam. One of your golden betting rules.
Ed, that's why I'm going big on Andy Flower. Underestimated.
A top bowler bet as well. There might be a little bit of value on top bowler. Kuldeep Yadav, 5 wins in 17. We think it should be about 5-2 or better, and you can get 7-2 with Betfair Sportsbook. And just finally, just a bit of a flyer. If you want a really big price.
Just to the point where I wondered whether the preview of India West Indies would ever end. Go
I'm
on.
Still going. Stop me if you...
if I dare. But then you'll have to talk about something else. It's Sophie's choice.
Kieran Pollard, 7-1 with Betfair Sportsbook. I think that's a bit big. Look, I haven't got any data which suggests he's too big. I mean, he's got like one win in
this
the
is
last
a hunch.
Seven. It's a bit of a hunch.
This is why they call you the poor man's Ed Smith. You just go on your hunches.
Stop upsetting my train of thought. He should be probably be shorter than that because of what the wickets are going to do, because of the doubts over Hetmyer and Pooran and that middle order, because he's got a good batting record at the Rajiv Gandhi Stadium. Look, 7-1 is a bit of a fly, but you could, might be able to go somewhere fancy for Christmas.
Okay, and double ending. Before we move on, you think you might have found some value on an even more obscure market.
Oh, Six Appeal. I almost forgot Six Appeal. India 11-10, outsiders on this market, according to Betfair Sportsbook. West Indies evens. Now, that's because West Indies have got this great reputation as being the big six hitters in the world, and in some ways that is justified. But, you know, I've crunched the numbers for everybody. Last 12 months, India are averaging 6.4 sixes per game, West Indies 6. Last 2 years, India 6.6, West Indies 6.1. I think the favourites are the wrong way round. I'd be going even money, India 11-10, West Indies. And no one in the last 12 months has hit more sixes than Rohit Sharma. Hit me up. This series of Cricket Only Better has had something of a theme. Technique and temperament being eroded in Test cricket by white ball. Suddenly we had a worrying thought. What if it wasn't true? We know it's the perception, but what does the data actually say? So joining us now is Ed Bayliss, an analyst from redballdata.com, to say true or false. Ed, welcome.
Hello.
Easy question. True or false, is technique and temperament being eroded in Test cricket by the white ball? Or put another way, is Test cricket batting getting worse?
Give you the short answer. Yes, I think it is.
Tell us why.
That's harder. I'll tell you how I see it. The tricky thing is I'm no expert on technique, so all I can do is say what the data says and then try and fill in the gaps. But I think what happened is 2020 cricket kicked off roughly 2005. It began in earnest, and teams weren't really that good at it then. You could see that in the stats and the way that strike rates have evolved. So look at T20 internationals, first ones in 2005. You'd average kind of 19 runs a wicket. Strike rates around 120 were normal for a team performance. So I think teams were batting like it was the last 20 overs of a 50-over game because that was all they knew. And it took a long time for players to adapt. So you can see in about 2013 onwards, strike rate and average picked up in 2020 internationals, suddenly rocketing, and strike rate of 133 across the team were normal, and averages as well. So batsmen could be more aggressive and not get out. So you could very much see the evolution of the game there. Now, that didn't immediately feed through into the modern ODI, which is a very recent invention. But you get to about 2015, and suddenly, pioneered, I think, by England, the way batsmen played ODI cricket changed. And suddenly you had teams that were able to, as a side, average 35 and score at a strike rate of 90, which is just... unheard.
Yeah, perhaps understandable why they went, why the English test team went to try to convert that into the test arena, because their ODI team had been so successful in reshaping the game. They thought, well, let's give it a go in tests. And of course, it didn't work, but go on.
That's absolutely possible. And one of the factors around players like Jos Buttler being picked in the modern game is if you don't think, if you don't think that you can see the right quality of players in the first class competition, then can you adapt what you can see in the shorter forms? So I think that the short answer is the impact of 2020 on ODIs that got felt through in about 2015 then started to impact test playing a few years later. So 2018 and 2019, we've really seen the drop off in test batting. Again, this is interpretation of data rather than fact. I think it's that... whereas in the past, you'd have someone like, say, Alistair Cook, Ian Bell, those kind of players who could have 7 or 8 ODIs a year batting against international players and batting their normal game, as well as the test cricket. All of a sudden, that's gone, and ODI cricket is a completely different beast. And therefore, international players are getting much less practice at batting in that 3-and-over style of cricket.
So just tell me, in terms of the numbers and in terms of the model, What's actually happened to Test batting averages?
Held steady at about 32 runs per wicket 2005 to 2016. Clearly there's volatility year to year. Then 2018 saw a big decline in runs per wicket to 26. So what's that, almost 20%. And then it's up a little in 2019. We're looking at 29 runs per wicket. But yeah, still 10% down on where we'd been before then.
And where's the curve expected to go? Because we often talk about things returning to the mean. Is this a consistent downward curve, or is it going to level off or rise again? What do you think?
One factor that confounds it is the 2019 Cricket World Cup. International teams focusing on that, playing a lot of ODIs, means that Test cricket went onto the back burner. Will Test cricket be the focus now? Was that effect temporary? That's kind of hard to say. So I think it's quite difficult to say what happens next. I suppose one thing that teams may start to learn is that someone like Jason Roy won't be a natural fit into Test teams, so maybe we won't see as much white ball to red ball transference, and maybe that will mean that we'll see a slight improvement in that way, a bit more of a focus in players that have got a chance of succeeding. But crystal ball, it's difficult. Players are not behaving the way that they're used to. A cricket career isn't as clearly marked out as it was. Look at something like the 10-over leagues, which have come up very rapidly, and hearing about county players who would previously have been having a fairly quiet winter, now cropping up all over the world, playing a completely different format to Red Bull.
I guess with 10-over cricket, the 100 coming in, it's not unreasonable to reckon that actually those numbers could start going down, those batting averages could start going down. And we're also seeing a massive drop-off in the draw, which we've spoken about before on this show. The draw is becoming obsolete because essentially people can't bat time. Ed Bayliss, thanks ever so much for joining Cricket Only Better. Please do come again soon.
Thank you very much.
It's Mythbuster, and it's the choice of Sam Collins.
Mythbuster.
Andy Flower.
Andy Flower.
The Zimbabwean hard nut.
The scourge of...
Steve Finn, Jonathan Trott, Michael Carberry, Nick Compton. Think of any other. Kevin Peterson.
But, you know, English cricket owes Andy Flower a lot, clearly. And yeah, I think he always struck me as somebody who understood how to get the best out of himself. So I'm intrigued. You know, for a long time, he was number one batsman in the world.
Could we get the best out of him, Sam? What if we betted him in every first innings of his Test career to £10 level stakes for him to be top Zimbabwe run scorer, right? Would we have made money, or would we have lost money?
Well, look, I'm going to say we would make money. That's why I put this up here, because I think that he was the best batsman in a pretty ordinary team that, as I said, was performing pretty well at the time. So I would expect him to make money.
Let's find out what his average price was. And okay, Brace yourself. Here comes the Sam Collins trademark computer voice, Stuart Conroy from Betfair Sportsbook.
Considering that Andy Flower generally batted at 5 throughout his Test career, meant he would have generally been a bigger prize than if he was to, say, bat in the top 3. He was also in probably the best Zimbabwean team of any generation, with player like David Howden, all-rounder Neil Johnson, Alistair Campbell, and of course his brother Grant. The advantage that Andy had was his adaptability. He could score runs on any pitch on any continent. Over the course of his career, from his Test debut in 1992 until 2002, his average first innings price would be 10-3.
Pretty good this week, I thought.
Wow.
Have you been practicing that?
No, just got on it.
63 tests Andy Flower played, topped in his third Test, then his fourth and his sixth. Managed to cop with just 24 against England at Lord's in 2000. Swings and roundabouts, so as he was denied an outright win with an unbeaten 114 v Bangladesh in Chattagram, which sounds like a dodgy online...
Is that an autocorrect mistake? Is that Chittagong autocorrected?
In 2001. Chattagram.
Generally.
Meet people.
Is that autocorrect?
No, it's not.
Okay, perfect.
Linking you with people like-minded. He tied with Craig Wishart, Is he up or down? He had 17 wins. Up or down? Up or down?
Well, I've told you already. I think there's no such place as Chattergram, by the way. It's clearly Chittagong. There is. Okay, no, the Bangladesh government informed that the name of the port of Chittagong will be changed to Chattagram. Okay, I think he's up. Clearly, I think he's up.
He's up £127.75.
Oh, I'm getting good at this.
Yeah.
I'm getting good at this. You see the rationale?
We did need some more winners, so I'm grateful for you recommending we did Andy Flower, a winner.
Perfect. So where does that put him in our hit list?
That puts him second behind the great Michael Holding, still out in front at number one on £285.
Whoa. Okay, and I'm going to think about another. I've got another one for us for next week.
Can I save it until the outro?
Okay.
People might want to continue to listen.
Consider it saved.
That's the big interview klaxon.
Yeah.
And this week we're joined by Crick Info's UK editor, Andrew Miller. Andrew, welcome to Cricket Only Better.
Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. It's a great pleasure to have you on. We've got some great questions lined up for you. The easiest one is coming first. Where are England going as a test match team?
Well, I think that the evidence we've got from this series is that they are a team in very much in transition, very much not quite sure how to make that shift from having this crazy sort of white ball dominated world in which Trevor Bayliss wanted positive cricket at every opportunity and then suddenly put the brakes on and try to bat out full days of test cricket and all the rest of it. They did that terribly in the first test at Bay Oval. They just looked tentative. They tried to change their ways, but instead of blocking out, they were just playing terrible shots and looking in two minds. They've been better at it in this test. I mean, Joe Root getting back to form was a big deal, to be perfectly honest. I mean, a desperately flat pitch and all the rest of it, but the pressure he was under, certainly as captain, was quite immense coming into the game, and so to come out with a double century is testament to his character. And I thought Ollie Pope played a nice little innings. 75 was a good sign. I don't know where they're going yet because it's really early days. But they've got 2 years to get themselves back up to speed ahead of the Ashes down under. My instinct is that'll be too soon for them. I think they've really gone nowhere for basically three years since Alistair Cook stepped down as captain. Even then, he was looking on his last legs. So I don't. Hedging my bets at the moment. Let's put it that way. I can't see them. Doing brilliantly in the near future.
Hedging your bets links perfectly to my next sentence and a stat buster for you. Last 41 tests, if you'd backed England to £100 level stakes in test matches, you'd be down £500. So they're pretty mediocre, and we think they're going to be mediocre for a while yet, right? And that's because chiefly they've got this issue with batting. The batting is a big work in progress. The Ashes struggles from the summer are going to continue into South Africa in the next half of the winter?
Yeah, I do. I think they will, because what England have not managed to do, and they've been talking about this for ever since Andrew Strauss retired, was replace that great team that got England to the top of the world, number one team. You look back at it now with Cook and Strauss at the top of the order, Jonathan Trott, massively underrated number three, Kevin Peterson, Ian Bell, who everyone thought was an underachiever, yet he's averaging more than anyone in the team at the moment. These guys are irreplaceably good test cricketers. And, do you remember the times when people look back and said, they were too boring, they won too boringly? England would kill for a boring team that won that frequently in this day and age. I was surprised, to be honest, this summer that they got out of the Ashes with a draw. I suspected they were going to lose 4-0. And I think had Stokes not been a superman, they would have got properly stuffed in that series as well. So, they're not a very good test team. I don't think that Dom Sibley, sadly, looks like the answer at the top of the order. What little we've seen on, and bear in mind, these have been very slow pitches in New Zealand. So, you got hit on the head twice, looking very unsure against the short ball. Kagiso Rabada in South Africa will enjoy that, let alone Hazelwood & Co. in Australia. And Zach Crawley, likewise, I wasn't entirely convinced. You can't read much into a single-figure innings and debut. But again, similar problems of guys who've come out of county cricket and have looked the business on slightly lower level cricket and then come up against guys who just know what they're doing and look a little bit at sea. So yeah, the batting is not something that's going to come good in the short term. Although, having said that, if Root can get back to form and if Root can lead from the front while having form, then England's got a chance, because the biggest problem they've had recently, of course, is that, you know, he's been averaging, what, 27 for the calendar year. If he's a captain and he's not a very good tactical captain, if he's a terrible batting captain as well, then England are sacrificing their best asset, i.e. his runs, for what? For some pretty abject leadership in the field and likelihood of, yeah, things not moving forward very well.
Miller, do you remember a lad called Ronnie Rosenthal?
I certainly remember the name, yes.
Okay, as a Tottenham fan in the early 90s, it was a pretty bleak time, much like being an England Test cricket fan around now. And Ronnie Rosenthal was the sort of bane of my existence back then, because he was absolutely rubbish, but every time he was about to get dropped, he would do something inexplicable, like score four goals against, I think he scored four goals against Southampton once in a sort of FA Cup game, which we were, anyway, point is that we couldn't get rid of him. We couldn't get rid of him forever and ever and ever and ever. And I'm just sort of looking, that's sort of what I always think. Alistair Cook was very good at this as well at the time when his captaincy was in under pressure. Joe Root's comeback, he scored, I know what you're saying. It is obviously a fantastic achievement to score double 100 when everybody's calling for your head. But should we link his batting and his success as a batsman to the captaincy? You know, it seems that if there's anything we can learn from one day cricket, from the white ball, it's been the effect, the influence that a captain can have on setting team culture and the direction of the team. And it's clear that Root, rather like Cook before him, doesn't really seem to be influencing England in that respect.
I couldn't agree more. The trouble is, I just don't see where England are going if they don't have Root as captain. I mean, you're looking at Rory Burns, maybe, who again, he got 100. He's looking more and more assured as England's new opener. I mean, he's the first opener since Cook and Strauss. So basically the first opener for a decade to both start the season as an England, start the calendar year as an England opener and finish it, which is quite remarkable. Mm. England have been churning for openers like for fun. So finally, they seem to have got a banker there. So potentially he could be a replacement. After all, he's a championship winning captain with Surrey, so he's got something. But beyond that, you're looking at Ben Stokes, which is just a terrible idea for all the reasons we know about what happens to all-rounders when they get too much on their plate. Or Jos Buttler, who, he's got the white ball captaincy looming with Owen Morgan retires. And quite apart from the else, he's such an important player across all formats. Do you want to encumber him with that role as well? So I don't know if England know quite how they can get away from Root at the moment. I think they want to have faith in him, just as they wanted to have faith in Cook. I thought that faith in Cook was misplaced, to be perfectly honest. I didn't think he was a particularly inspired leader. But again, there weren't really any obvious options outside of him. So if that is the case, and for all the reasons mentioned, I don't see options. The only option really is to have Root scoring runs and therefore imbuing the team with confidence by leading from the front, which is the sort of thing that, say Graham Gooch used to do. Again, he wasn't the most proactive of captains, but every now and again, he was just looked like the best captain England could possibly have because he was scoring amounts of runs.
I mean, I think we'd all love Joe Root to score a double 100 every first innings. Ed Hawkins certainly would, given his... you don't like Root as a first innings bet, but...
No, he's a terrible
bet. So Root's average as a captain, 39 versus 52, not as captain. You, Miller, I'm sort of melding stats and your impression as a sort of aged journalist now. You've seen off several England captains.
I have, worryingly.
And you've actually also seen several England captains go through this sort of siege mentality, which, it was interesting to see that Joe Root's brother mouthing off about people, not having faith in him. And it's like, well, okay, if he scores runs, then people will, that's his job, is to score runs as well as to lead the team. What do you see happening with Joe Root? If you were a betting man, would you be betting on him to be topping England's run scorers in South Africa? Or do you think this is just a one-off in terms of return to form?
I don't think it's a one-off. I think it was something very clear about the way in which he went through the gears in that innings. He was looking incredibly unsure of himself in the first half of his innings. He ground his way through the 90s, desperate to make sure they didn't cap that same old accusation of failing to convert his starts, which obviously has hung over him for a while. But then yesterday, during his innings yesterday, he looked like the route that we've forgotten he could be. I mean, you know, you remember how completely scuppered he was during the World Cup final. He couldn't get Colin Grundholm off the square. He was trying to play his runs down to third man, and he basically seized up the innings, and England almost lost because Root, of all people, was unable to rotate the strike. And this is the one thing that he was doing so well yesterday. His feet were light. He was weighing his glides down through the cordon. That sort of strange ability he's got just to go from 0 to 30 without you noticing playing a shot. That was back all of a sudden. And that's the technique thing, it's the mindset thing. It's all the other things that have been clogging up his brain for a long time. So that's going to be something that he's not going to disappear overnight now that he's got it back. But I don't know. It is important that he scores runs. I would think that he would be a pretty good bet to carry on that form in South Africa because, well, if he's not going to score them, who else is? Robbie Burns might. Ben Stokes certainly could. Beyond that, though, you're looking at the same old problems of a fair few holes in that top order. You really think Joe Denley's going to be England's man? I don't know. It's if you're talking slim pickings, which you are when it comes to England batting, Root is always going to be a good bet for leading run scorer because he is a class act regardless of form.
Slim pickings with top batsman indeed. England's actually top batsman market is one of the worst value you can come across in international cricket. The only guy I can make out being value at the moment in terms of a wrong price is Rory Burns. Ben Stokes is now artificially short because of what he did in the summer. Slim pickings with the ball though as well, Andrew. Broad is coming towards the end of his career. Anderson is a fitness worry. Leach is not exactly pulling up trees. Jofra Archer is obviously rated highly, but they have strife in that department as well. And that's quite unusual for a test team to be going through flux in both specialisms, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, it is. But again, this is a problem. England have had, well, I guess for the last 5 years, they've been trying the succession planning for Broad and Anderson because there's been an assumption that, you know, either or both were nearing the end, basically from the moment that Anderson turned 30. And so, you know, we're talking, you know, Anderson's near 40 now and he's still England's best bowler. So they've been trying this succession planning. I mean, Broad, you sense they're trying to phase him out every winter, but no one phases in his place and he ends up being the best bet coming into another cycle. So I don't know. I was surprised it didn't blood Saj Mahmood. I thought he looked like a fiery prospect. A few occasions I watched him in county cricket. I really liked the look of him. I thought they might have used this match, which of course is outside the World Test Championship. They might have used it to try a few things. Matt Parkinson, the leg spinner. I mean, I don't know. I think he may be a better bet in one day cricket than Test cricket. But again, we won't know unless we try him out. And Sam Curran, I don't think Sam Curran is the answer to Test cricket, but he's certainly doing his best to compound that because every time he throws the ball, he somehow manages to burgle something by being small and annoying and zipping it around strange angles and getting the wicket. So, you know, he's a tremendous competitor and you can't underestimate the importance of that in Test cricket. But yeah, I agree that it's not looking entirely rosy for England. They've spent 4 years basically ignoring Test cricket, and it's going to take more than just 4 years, I think, to make up the ground, the atrophy, I guess, rather than anything else. It's just things have kind of withered on the vine a little bit while they've been obviously concentrating on white ball cricket and the World Cup win.
Andrew Miller, thanks ever so much.
Pleasure.
I'm still high on life after my Andy Flower success. So I'm going to nominate for next week Controversy's Christopher Cairns as our Mythbuster.
To do what?
To be our Mythbuster.
Yeah, but what?
Bowling.
Oh, bowling, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting.
I'll tell you now, that's a loser. Do you want to have another go? Because I'd love it to see how many consecutive ups you could get by picking the Mythbuster.
Okay, I was just thinking there was that period, the golden period where he was one of the top quick bowlers in the world. But I take your point. Okay, let's stay on the theme of controversy. Shakib Al Hassan, bowling.
Bowling for Bangladesh?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not confident for you, but I can't keep going round. Over the next minute,
I'm going to try and think. Okay.
Tell you what, you have a think. I'm going to tell the good people what's on next week's show.
Okay. Go for it.
Very excited about next week's show. Not that this wasn't exciting, but we're starting to look at the big bash people. Where's the value? Which team's going to win? Who are the top run scorers going to be? Who are your top bowlers? Who are the best signings that have been made? Who are the bad signings that have been made? Which teams are well balanced? Which teams aren't? And we're probably going to do this in two parts before we have a break for Christmas. Sam, I'm coming back to you now. Who's your Mythbuster for next week?
Imran Khan.
Top Pakistan Test match bowler.
Yeah.
Terrific. Love to find out how he did. So there we go. That's it. Do you want to sign off with any advice to our punters? Any golden rules for them?
Spread the word. Give us some feedback. Bet with money that's yours. Bet responsibly.
Yeah, visit betting.betfair for all the analysis and best bets. And join us again next week.